This is the last day of this November 2008 7-day session. We'll take another koan this morning. This is from the collection called the Book of Serenity, the Book of Equanimity, Shoyo Roku. It's number 23, and it's called Luzu Faces the Wall. Here's how it goes. Whenever Luzu saw a monk coming, he turned around and sat facing the wall. Hearing of this, Nanxuan said, "I usually teach monks by saying, realize what existed before the universe unfolded, when the Buddha had not yet appeared in the world. Still, I can't get anybody enlightened, or even half enlightened. If he teaches like that, Luzu will go on till the year of the ass." Again, the donkey. Now, these are these Chinese names are easy to pronounce, so I'll stick with the Chinese. Luzu is not very well known. He was a disciple of the great Mazu, who is reported to have had 139 enlightened disciples. He was one of them. A reading here from Andy Ferguson's Zen's Chinese Heritage. It says, he did not leave a record of his origins or fate. Nonetheless, he figures prominently in Zen history for his unorthodox teaching style. When students would come to inquire about Zen, he would often turn and silently face the wall. The story, Luzu Faces the Wall, has been a koan for generations of Zen students down to the present. And there's some, not just one actually, there are three dialogues that are presented here, but only one of them I think is worth reading. When he was a teacher, the great Dongshan came to pay his respects. And Dongshan bowed, stood up, and stood there attentively. After a while, he went out and then came back in. Luzu said, "Just so, just so. So it's like this." Dongshan said, "There are many who don't approve." Luzu said, "Why must you speak contentiously?" Dongshan then bowed. That's all the material we have on Luzu. Now, Nanxuan is a different matter. Nanxuan's Japanese name is Nansen, the teacher of the great Joshu, or Zhao Zhou. Nanxuan was also a disciple of Ma Zu. He lived in the 8th and 9th centuries. His lay surname was Wang. That I mention that because the next sentence. Even before he became an old Zen teacher, his students referred to him as Old Teacher Wang. Before meeting Ma Zu, he was already widely versed in the various schools and sutras of Mahayana Buddhism. At their first meeting, he is said to have, quote, "instantly forgotten the net of delusions and delighted in samadhi." After gaining transmission from Mazu, Nanshuan built a solitary hut on Mount Nanshuan, from which he derived his name, and remained there for more than 30 years practicing Zen. So this is after his enlightenment or enlightenments, and then gaining Dharma transmission from Mazu, he retired to the mountains and sat alone for 30 years. A high-ranking official invited Nanshuan to descend from the mountain and honored him by becoming his student. And this caused Nanshuan's reputation to spread widely, and students numbering in the hundreds came to train under him, including Joshu. One day, Nanshuan entered the hall and addressed the monks, saying, "Dipamkara Buddha said, the arising in mind of a single thought gives birth to the myriad things. Why is that phenomenal existence empty? If there is nothing within mind, then how does one explain how the myriad things arise? Isn't it as if shadowy forms differentiate emptiness?" This question is like someone grasping sound and placing it in a box, or blowing into a net to fill it with air. Therefore, some old worthy said, "It's not mind, it's not Buddha, it's not a thing." Thus, we just teach you, brethren, to go on a journey. That old worthy was his own teacher, Mazu, Basso. If there is nothing within mind, then how does one explain how the many things arise in the mind? When Nanshuan ascended the Dharma seat in the hall, the official Lu Gong, that's who coaxed him off of the mountain, said, "We invite the master to expound the Dharma for the sake of beings." Master Nanshuan said, "What would you have me say?" The official said, "Can the master offer no expedient method to enter the way?" The master said, "What do you say is lacking?" The official said, "Why are there six realms and four modes of birth?" Nanshuan said, "I don't teach that." This dialogue goes right to this unorthodox teaching method of Lu Zhu, of turning and sitting facing the wall. When Nanshuan said, "What would you have me say?" And then again, "What do you say is lacking?" When this same official took his leave from Nanshuan to return to his duties as magistrate of such and such city, Nanshuan asked him, "When your eminence returns to Xuancheng, how will you govern the people there?" The official answered, "I will use wisdom to govern them." Nanchuan said, "In that case, the people there will meet with great distress." Where so long as we are self-consciously endeavoring to do good, we're in danger of not. As long as we approach a situation with a notion in our mind that we're going to do good, then the opposite may happen. When Nanchuan entered Shuangcheng, that's where that guy is, the magistrate, the official came out of the city to greet him. Pointing at the city gate, the official said, "Everyone calls this the Gate of Harmony. What would the master call it?" Nanchuan said, "I fear that if I were to speak, it would insult Your Eminence's reputation." When Nanchuan was near death, the head monk said, "Master, where will you be 100 years from now?" Nanchuan said, "I'm going to be an ox living down at the bottom of the mountain." The monk said, "May I follow you to that place as an ox?" Nanchuan said, "If you follow me, you must do so with a single blade of grass in your mouth." The master then became ill. He said to the monks, "The star's light is dim but eternal. Don't say that I'm coming or going." When he finished speaking, he died. This image of an ox living down at the bottom of the mountain is a combination of two old Zen metaphors. The ox, or sometimes the water buffalo, is seen as a symbol of service. The broad shoulders and strength of an ox carrying a burden, carrying others, working tirelessly in the fields. And the bottom of the mountain, yeah, it's sort of the same idea. After reaching enlightenment, or at the top of the mountain, then one needs to descend from that peak and come down and enter the marketplace and to serve others. That's all the material we have on these two masters. So back to the koan. Whenever Lu Zhu saw a monk coming, he turned around and sat facing the wall. This is a supreme demonstration of teaching. but one that is so forbidding, so steep, that few would be able to receive it. And no doubt that is why Luzu is relatively unknown. His fame comes just from that method of teaching. But let's appreciate what he was teaching. He's teaching the same thing that Bodhidharma was teaching when Bodhidharma sat for 9 years facing the wall. Lutzu was becoming a wall to that visitor who came for his teaching. And is there any better teacher than the wall? Because it just turns us back to ourselves. Is there any better teacher than oneself? Look at the riches that we mine in Sesshin and outside Sesshin while facing the wall. Riches that we would never find were we not pushed back into ourselves. You might call Zen practice, at its most fundamental, it is taking the mind off of objects, turning it around back to the seer. Our tendency as human beings is to grasp at objects, to pursue objects, not just physical objects, but objects of mind, thoughts, stories in the mind, fantasies. What a new vista is revealed when we detach from the objects of mind, turn the mind back, and see the source of these mind projections. This is the most clearly revealed in the practice of who am I, where whatever is going on in the mind is just plowed into this one question: who? Who is thinking? Who is in pain? Who's feeling dejected? Who's angry? Who's cold? Who's hungry? We've spent lifetimes, maybe millions, countless lifetimes, dwelling in objects of mind. Come to the wall, and we can change that. There's the image in spiritual practice of the mind being like the screen at a cinema, where we're always watching all these illusory images, forms playing out. We need to turn the mind back to the projector that's displaying these forms, in order to see all of mind. Otherwise, we're just caught up in illusion. But really, it's not just who am I or what is this, but also mu. Mu isn't a thought. It is the absence of thoughts at its purest. It is true that it is, in the beginning, it is a kind of object, the word mu. All right, there it is. We're gazing at the word mu. But it's a wall of a word. And it forces us to turn the mind back, to see through the word. Through the object, through the subject-object dichotomy. We get practice every day in doing this wall gazing. We find ourselves in a relationship of one kind or another, work or personal romantic relationship, and we get into some kind of conflict. The ordinary person, of course, will find fault with the other and blame the other and be eager to tell the other what's wrong with the other. In Zen, we are called upon to turn the mind back and look at ourselves. Because there is no other without the self. The relationship is the joining of self and other. So a practical way to apply this wall gazing in a relationship is to ask, how am I contributing to this? What am I doing here that's contributing to this problem? How am I responsible here? This reflection is certainly a valuable part of Zen practice. In the heat of battle, some especially quarrelsome matter, to be able to just stop and mentally sit down, turn the mind back on oneself, and examine oneself. Anger, when angry, this also is the supreme way of responding to anger. The ordinary person will just focus so entirely on the object of their anger, him or her or them, that they aren't even aware, really, that they're angry. And so the best thing we can do when we get into a conflict with someone is to notice, okay, I'm angry here. I'm getting angry. What's going on here? Anger usually is a sign of some way in which we're stuck, where we're attached. When we get anger is a signal of how we're getting snagged. And we want to then, instead of playing out what we've done for millennia and just focusing on the other, turn it back. Well, I've mentioned difficulties in interpersonal difficulties, but there are infinite situations in which it works to reflect back, look back on oneself. States of joy, ecstasy, bliss, the more we are caught up in the circumstances, the people that are contributing to this joy, the more we are likely to suffer when it passes, as it always does. So to have, what we're really talking here is presence of mind, to not lose oneself in these states of complete abandon into objects, but to maintain this self-awareness, not awareness of self, the I and the me, but awareness of what's going on. And Lujhu, in turning around and sitting facing the wall, is also offering a demonstration of teaching. Someone once said that a teacher is someone who shares with other what he does seriously for himself. And that turning his back on the student is ultimately an expression of faith in the student's own resources. You don't need me to figure this out. As long as you look to me to understand this, then you will miss your own treasure. It's really the same as when the teacher rings his handbell in Doksan. That is a ringing statement of faith in the student. You can do this. You can see into this. Not yet, but look. Look into yourself. It's all there. You don't need me. You don't need my answers. How can anyone give someone else answers to things that are so personal? Famous passage by Zen master. No, actually, I don't know who it is who said this, but here's how it goes. In Zen, the emphasis falls on the correctness or truth or falsity of the training, not on the excellence or mediocrity of the teaching or the depth or shallowness of the principle. There's a great story from this collection of stories from all over the world called The Man of Many Qualities about a burglar, a housebreaker, who's getting on in age, and his son decides that it was about time for him to learn the profession, to support the family. I don't know where this story is from. So the son asks his father for lessons. The father agrees and took him along on his next hit attempt. So together they break through a fence, steal into the mansion, and open a large chest. The father suggests that the son steps into the chest to pick out the valuables there. And the son did just that. As soon as the son got in the chest, the father dropped the lid, locked the chest, sneaked out into the courtyard, loudly knocked on the door, waking the whole household, and then escaped through a hole in the fence. All right, the residents, all excited now, scurried around with their candles and discovered that the thief had gotten away. Meanwhile, the son, locked in the chest, was terribly afraid, but in that moment of extremity, an idea flashed through his mind. He made a scratching noise inside the chest, like a mouse. And at that sound, the master of the family sent the maid to investigate. When she unlocked the chest, the boy jumped out, blew out the candle, pushed the maid aside, and ran off with the neighbors at his heels. They were closing in on him. As he passed a well, he hit upon a second thought. He picked up a large stone and dropped it into the well with a loud splash. His pursuers heard the sound and all gathered around the deep and dark well, trying to see the burglar drowning himself. The boy kept running. He finally got back home, and he complained to his father about what had happened. Father listened with understanding and asked him, "Tell me, son, how did you get away?" And the son told the whole story, and at the end, the father smiled and said, "There, son, you have now learned the art of burglary." When left to our devices, we discover all kinds of things. When facing ourselves with no recourse but to look into our own mind, our own heart, then all manner of things can be revealed. Resources we never had any idea were there. Now, Lu Zhu's method of just turning around every time a student approached is definitely an extreme one. Every other teacher I've ever heard does at least sometimes engage in offering what help through words or actions that he or she can with the student, but never with the delusion that what he says or does is in any fundamental way resolving the student's predicament. When I have a new student ceremony, I will sometimes say, you know, a teacher's job is not to answer the student's questions, but to clarify them. Sometimes a teacher will give some practical advice, but mostly a teacher says what Lu Zhu is demonstrating. Sit. The biggest conceit for a teacher to think that he's really doing something for the student. And then that's where it leads into what Nanxuan said. Having heard of Luzu's unorthodox method, Nanxuan said, I usually teach monks by saying, and then here's his statement to the student, realize what existed before the universe unfolded, when the Buddha had not yet appeared in the world. See that which existed before the world itself, before we created the world with our mind. If you're having a problem as a man, find out what you were before you were a man. If you're having a problem as a woman or as any ethnic or racial, find out what you were before you were these things. What was your face before your parents were born? In other words, see that which is beyond all form, beyond all concepts, notions, beyond learning and conditioning. And then he says, still, I can't get anybody enlightened, or even half enlightened. The Buddha would appreciate that. He said, surely by oneself is evil done, by oneself one becomes impure. By oneself evil is avoided, by oneself one becomes pure. Purity and impurity are of the individual. No one purifies another. Buddhas can but point the way. Each person must work out his own liberation with diligence. It is humbling as a teacher to realize that it really is has to all come from the student. There are traditions where there's the understanding that the guru, let's say, will extend his grace to you and bring you to awakening that way. I don't buy it. Maybe a temporary state of bliss and excitation. But how can one change one's way of understanding and relating to the world except through one's own efforts? How can anyone change that for you? This is a big part of the value of Zazen, and especially in Sesshin, is just the forging of character. The not getting what we want, and having to go on to find out for oneself that it's not about what we want. It's not even about what we can control. Effort, yes. Effort is indispensable. It's vital. But ultimately, our effort leads us to surrender, to relinquish this egoistic notion of making things the way we want them. And that's when things can open up, when we let go of that conceit. Here is Zhao Zhou, Nanchuan's most famous disciple. "I entered the Buddhist life when I was a small boy. I have grown old now. Confronted with people, I now find myself powerless to liberate them. I used to discipline myself in order to help people someday when I became enlightened. Contrary to my expectation, however, I have become a fool, whether you believe it or not." It's important not to imagine that Joshu is pitying himself here, feeling badly. He understands in the deepest way the limitations of what anyone can do for someone else. And then Nanchuan ends by saying, "If he teaches like that," referring back to Luzu's turning his back on his students, "if he teaches like that, Luzu will go on till the year of the ass." Must be some mythological age or eon. There's a lot in here that's similar to another koan, this one from the Mumonkan, called Daitsu Chisho Buddha. "Once a monk asked Master Seijo, 'Daitsu Chisho Buddha, the Buddha of supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom, did zazen on the Bodhi seat for 10 kalpas, but could neither manifest the Dharma nor attain Buddhahood. Why was this?' The master said, 'Your question is exactly to the point.' The monk persisted, 'Why did he not attain Buddhahood by doing zazen on the Bodhi seat?' The master replied, 'Because he didn't attain Buddhahood.'" Best thing we can do is forget about Buddhahood, forget about notions of enlightenment, self, other. Just in any moment, be our own wall. Turn the mind inward. See that this nature of ours is the nature. It's not just our own individual nature. It is reality. What we come to see by looking deeply into our own mind, our humanity, is humanity, capital H. It's not just us. The nature of phenomena, the coming and going of mental formations and things, is just what the way that plays out in our mind is the nature of phenomena in all realms. our time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.